I'm Patty Campbell for the Virginia Voice, and today our guest on the Writer's Voice is Alita Dupre. She has written a cookbook called Deliciously Southern, and she's going to tell us a little bit about the story of this cookbook and maybe give us a few hints on cooking.
But thank you, Patty, for having me, and I'm excited about being here. Thank you so much.
Tell me a little bit about the history of this cookbook. It has an interesting history.
It does. When I look at the cookbook, it's a symbol of hope for me because it's literally like a phoenix that rises up from the ashes. My parents opened up a restaurant, and I helped birth for over 21 years. It was a family-style restaurant in Calhoun, Georgia, and we were very successful. We seated over 300 people. Things were going great. My husband and I bought the restaurant a few years before my parents retired, and business was booming. And then one day we got a phone call early in the wee hours of the morning that our restaurant was on fire. And
what caused the fire?
It was a malfunction in the fryer. Everything was turned off. It was just really strange. And we had never had a fire before, being in the business all those years. And it was when I went down and looked, and it was my whole life went up in flames because everything I had worked so hard for was gone in just a few minutes.
I can imagine.
And that was tough. And that was 7 months later we reopened, and the recession was already beginning to affect our area very deeply, the carpet industry. And a few months later, the stock market crashed in 2008, and we could not overcome. It was stimulus. The fire was stimulus with the economy. We couldn't overcome it. And it was like a baby I had birthed for all those years, and it was so hard. It was like the sinking Titanic. I couldn't save it. And we made the decision to close because we were just dipping into our savings to make payroll, and we just couldn't overcome it, so we closed.
And now this was the livelihood for both you and your husband.
Right, my husband.
This was your family's livelihood.
That's correct. And so we had put our savings to buy the restaurant. My husband had retired from the state of Georgia, but we put our savings into it to buy. And I had been there the whole time because it was like my baby. It was like my baby, and it was my livelihood. I had everything planned. I'm a real planner. Everything just so. Everything's going to be. I had it, all my future planned out. And because it was beginning of the fire, and I had to talk about my faith too because God got me through that. And I think He was preparing me. But at the same time, I was praying for the business to pick up. It was like something deep down inside of me. I was like, you know, maybe God's got something else. But then I was fighting it because I'm real strong-willed, and I'm like, you know, my will. But anyway, when we made the decision, I remember the day I walked into the office and I told my husband, I said, you know, we can't continue this. And he was like a sigh of relief because he was hard for him to say that because it was my family business and me. But I remember I walked in and I said, we can't keep doing this. And so we made the decision to close. Yeah.
So you closed, and did you sell the restaurant?
No, we even tried to sell. We almost tried to give it away. We couldn't. But see, God had another plan because I had always wanted to do a cookbook. I always wanted to, you know, wheels would be turning. But I was raising kids and busy and working 7 days a week. The day we decided to close, we closed 3 weeks later. And I went 6 weeks of deep depression.
I can imagine.
Yeah, it was, because it was like I'd wake up in the morning, I'd go cook. Well, there was no place to go cook. What am I going to do? And because being in the kitchen for so long, I mean, I didn't have computer skills. I mean, I didn't even, just managing a restaurant and cooking, it seems like I wasn't ready for the workforce. So, but
you said that was in Calhoun. Tell us a little bit about Calhoun. Is it a small place? Okay. Were there other places you could have gone and worked for somebody else managing a restaurant?
Calhoun was a very small town. We were starting to grow because the carpet industry is actually in between Chattanooga, Tennessee, and Atlanta, Georgia, right on the interstate. But Calhoun was not diversified. It was all carpet and related industries to that. So when that, we were the first ones to feel the effect in most parts of the United States with the economy, because building stopped, so everything stopped. People were laid off, and they, our regular customers, couldn't afford to eat out. We had tourists that would eat with us, and of course they stopped traveling. But the fire, they didn't know we were reopened, so we had the double whammy. And it was just like it was, but like I said, it was something deep down inside of me that says maybe there's something else, but I was fighting it until that one day that changed everything. I had my pity party in the middle of my living room floor. Everybody was finally gone from the house, and I just cried out to God. I said, what am I going to do? You know, it's like he didn't know. And everything, I had lost everything, and my identity was in that too, because we were the Chamber of Commerce people. We were everything. We were the caterers. We were everything. And it was just, and I didn't want to go out and see anybody because the people were, I just felt ashamed, and I just felt, even though we couldn't help it, it was a loss. But anyway, that day was a turning point, and I say it's my Scarlett O'Hare kind of a God is my witness speech. And I got up, and I just felt like God speaking to my spirit, saying, you know, that cookbook that you've always wanted to write, this is the time to do it. And I felt so strong in my heart, and it was just like I had a peace that came over me. And so I went downstairs in our basement where I had really all was left of the fire in our restaurant, because we just sold everything for nothing, with a little box of recipes. And I went down. I remember going down and getting that box of recipes out and thinking, these was recipes that made us famous, and I'm going to build a cookbook around that. And I just sort of surrendered my will to God's will at that time. And I said, okay, God, I don't know what I'm going to do, because I don't even know how to use a computer. I don't use a laptop. How am I going to do this? But I started, when I started to write, I started seeing a new vision. I started healing. And it was like I could just, in my mind, I could visualize what the cover was going to look like. But I had to learn the process of writing and how to write a recipe. That's a format of writing a recipe, not just in the ingredients. I had to learn that.
I guess you also had to scale your recipes down.
Because we made them in tubs, big tubs, actually big tubs. So I did. I would try. I like the squash casserole and all of our recipes about 5 or 6 times to get it down. And in the meantime, I did gain 25 pounds eating. Exactly. But it was. I had to do that because I wanted to be exactly right, just from the ingredients, what it tasted like when people would taste of it. And I was real successful with that, because people tell me now, oh, that was so good. I remember how it tasted when we were at BJ. So, but I did. I had to get it down just to like 5 or 6 servings.
Now, are all the recipes in the cookbook, it's called Deliciously Southern again, are all the recipes in the cookbook from the restaurant, or did you add additional recipes?
Oh, I did. BJ's recipes are just sprinkled through the cookbook, and they'll have like BJ's restaurant. But I came from a long line of wonderful Southern cooks, and that was the passion that led me into the restaurant business. And so we have family favorite recipes, and I have stories in there too about, you know, who's going to make the sweet potato crunch for Thanksgiving and those kind of things that our family enjoyed. So those were definitely included, I knew right off hand. And then I got so excited from starting with BJ's recipes and family favorites that I wanted people to share. I got excited about Southern culture, because I really had time to get alone with myself and be just proud that I'm a Southerner. So I started thinking about our tour of the South. And so when someone could read the book, they could get a sample of all around our Southern region. So I got really excited. And my son goes to Baylor University in Texas, so I would make trips out there to visit him. And then I went down to New Orleans. So I literally did a tour of the South during that time, and sampling things and talking to people about recipes and getting a taste of our culture around the different areas in South Carolina. Of course, I'm in Virginia now, too. I do have Virginia peanut soup in the cookbook even.
Well, can you give us a sample of the book?
Sure, yes.
Maybe either read something from it,
sure,
or talk about one of the recipes in it?
Okay, I would love to. I have a sweet tooth, but I love pound cake. And pound cake is just a real special thing in the South that is comforting. And I'm going to read you a little story about pound cake. This is a 5-flavor pound cake that is real special to me, because I have a lot of special recipes. The 5-flavor pound cake is a favorite. And this is actually my cousin Belva's recipe. The first time that I had the taste of this was when my son was born, my firstborn. She brought me a pound cake. And this pound cake, and it was so good. And that's just the way we do in the South. We bring folks food, and that it's more than just good taste. It means something. And that was so special to me, because I had been in the hospital for almost a week, and we had a difficult time during that when my son was born, and she brought me the pound cake. And it was so good, and that just was a treasure. So this, of course, is included in the cookbook, but it has three sticks of butter. Of course, you know it's good, the real butter with anything. And it has five flavors, and the five flavors in it are rum extract, coconut, banana extract, lemon, and vanilla. Isn't that good? Doesn't that sound delicious?
It does sound wonderful.
And it has a glaze over it, and I like to put the almond glaze icing over it. It's also in the cookbook, too. But pound cakes, I kid people that when all else fails, bake them a pound cake. And that's just a sort of a symbol of our love on that. But this is real special. As I began to write and add these recipes, it was a lot of fun to be able to share that and hoping to encourage other people to show that hospitality and what it meant to me. So I had a chance to go back. But that's one of my favorite things, because you can't beat a good pound cake with strawberries or anything.
No, you can't beat a good pound cake. And you mentioned that pound cake is just one of our southern foods. What would you say characterizes southern food? What is southern cooking?
It's not just fried food. You know, we hear that around, you know, the United States and the world. Oh, it's just fried, but it's not. It's going to be healthy foods too, with our greens. I think southern food is it's comforting. It's really tasty. I think about my grandmother would season things and take the time to make it special. With that, but not only is, of course, we have wonderful biscuits and things like that too, but it's more than just fried foods and sweets and things like that you think of. But I think it's just extra special with, I think, thoughtfulness and gathering around the table and sharing stories and life and things. I think it goes beyond just the food. It's a hospitality. It really can't be separated between our food and our hospitality and our culture. It's sort of all in one, because I think Southerners, we celebrate in good times and bad times.
You said that pound cake is a distinctly Southern food, but I understand that you also make something called a sweet tea pie.
Yes, sweet tea pie. That has been the most talked about recipe in the cookbook, and it has really attracted the press too, because it's so interesting. It's the champagne of the South in a pie, which you can't get much more Southern or better than that. And it's actually an old-fashioned custard pie with maybe tea.
With sweet tea?
You put unsweetened tea in it, but it's 2 cups of sugar in one pie, so it becomes sweet tea. And 8 egg yolks. It has cornmeal even in it, which is a Southern staple in that. 2 teaspoons of cornmeal. And it has vanilla extract and a little bit of apple cider vinegar to cut some of the sweet. But it's delicious. And it's like an old-fashioned custard with tea. And it has just been sweet tea pie. Has been a lot of fun. It really has, too.
Oh, it sounds delicious.
It is.
Now, there's a long way between collecting those recipes and getting the book published. Tell us a little bit about the process of actually getting the book published once you wrote it.
Oh, wow. What a process it was. Like I said, gathering the recipes, deciding which ones was going to be in the cookbook, and balancing it. Because I wanted to create a cookbook that the Southerner could survive on this cookbook alone if they didn't have another one. That was my goal. But to have it balanced. And I have, like, I think 38 different kind of cake recipes in it, all your classics. But it's a balance. So once I decided that, and I felt really good about that, then, like, I had to learn how to write the recipe. I was telling you earlier on that. And then visualizing the cover, how I wanted it to perceive our gracious Southern lifestyle. And then shopping for a publisher, because I'm self-published. I contacted different companies, and then I decided I wanted it to be a hardcover with a spiral bound, and where it could be laid flat, because that's important too, in the kitchen. And I spoke with different people and got prices, because that was like, oh my goodness, you know, what do you have to do to get it? Actually, it's very expensive. But I found a company that was just, God opened up the door there again. Another miracle how they gave me everything I wanted at a cheaper price than what I had previously checked on once. It was not the quality. So that was a miracle. But I did. I had to learn about publishing and just sort of self-taught. On that. And
how long did all of that take?
It took about a year and a half in the beginning. That was covering sampling recipes. I mean, I made chocolate chip cookies about 5 or 6 different times. No wonder I gained the 25 pounds. But about a year and a half from that time on, and stopping and sampling and tasting and tweaking. And then once it goes to press, there's about another 3 different steps of sending the book back and tweaking and editing and those kind of things. And then you still have mistakes. I found that even after you get it printed.
But it was a lot involved. It was really an education within itself to learn about that. And then once you get the book, you go, okay, I've got this book. Now I've got to market it. So that was another venture that I'm still working on, too, marketing plans. And because I was so busy with finally getting it sent off, and then here it is, and I had to have my launch party, and I had a big to-do about that, and had all my friends and relatives, they just packed out the place, and that was exciting. But the marketing, and then how to get it out, distributor, and it was just, and I'm still learning that process, and being my own publicist, and writing all these letters, I mean, it's just, you know, just a continuing thing. It's exciting.
Well, you are here in Richmond to do a book signing at Barnes & Noble, and it's not very regular, is it, for Barnes & Noble to be putting on a book signing for someone who has self-published? Mm-hmm. How does that?
Oh, wow, that's the most exciting part of this whole thing, and it is a miracle. I went to... I actually called our local Barnes & Noble in Rome, and so I told her about my book, and she said, we really don't do anything like self-publishers. And I'm, okay, well, I'm not going to be defeated. There again, that scar on her spirit. So I went over and brought samples of pound cake. My favorite pound cake has opened a lot of doors for me. I guess that's why I talked about that first. She loved the book. She loved the pound cake. And she said, we'll have you before Christmas. Well, we did, and it went very well. And she was excited, and then she said, let's have you in another few weeks. Well, I did. And then in the spring, I would leave it like on consignment, and then they would sell books, and then they would send it off, and Barnes & Noble would pay me that way. And she called me one day. She said, could you bring over some more books because we're sold out? And I did. And then one day she said, this is the community relations manager, she said, I called the cookbook buyer in New York City, New York, and she said, I left a message and told him the name of your title and about a little bit about your story. And she said, he called me right back. And she said, he never calls anybody back. And he says, I like the name of the title, Deliciously Southern. And then she told him more about what had happened. And she said, she's real enthusiastic, and I think she can go to the top. I think she could be another Paula Deen, is what she told me. And so he said, I want her to send me her sales and marketing plan and cover letter, her books personally to me. Oh, man, so I had to write that cover letter. I mean, that was like the important letter of my lifetime. And my sales and marketing plan, I had to do all those I had to come up with. And so I sent it off to him. I got a personal email from him. He loved the book. Then another phone call that wanted to buy the book. And then they said, well, now we got to get you into a distributor, a national distributor. Well, I said, oh, my goodness, I won't be able to get it in, because self-publishers, to get in a national distributor for Barnes & Noble is very difficult. So there again, well, I started researching that, and they gave me three names to try to get in with. Well, Baker & Taylor, Ingram, and another one. Well, I sent off to that, didn't hear anything. Well, Baker & Taylor is, I guess, the biggest distributor in the world. And I thought, okay, they're the best. I want to go with the best. So there again, my faith, I prayed about it. Sent everything in. You didn't hear anything for maybe weeks and weeks and weeks. Finally, I made a phone call, and then they called me back, and sort of got lost in the shuffle, because they're used to publishers like Random House and those people handling that, not self-publishers sending things. And I remember my mom gets tickled when I tell this story, and I said, well, I said, y'all are the best. Y'all are the best. I said, I really want to be with y'all. And he just sort of chuckled, and this is like New Jersey, and he says, you know what? He said, I'm going to send you an email right now for confirmation. So they became my distributor, and that's the top. And they were actually amazed at Barnes & Noble when I contacted them. I said, Baker & Taylor's my distributor. And they go, wow, you know. That was a miracle, and so
a lot of doors,
yeah,
really have
doors
opened.
They have opened, and I actually met the cookbook buyer in New York by chance. My kids and I had a trip planned to New York, and it was after they had placed an order. Well, I took two five-favorite pound cakes on the plane with me, and met the.
I'm gonna have to make that pound cake.
They loved it. I got some handwritten notes even after I got back home, but they were excited, and he said, you know, we're behind you with this. You can go as far as Texas, and they even ordered more books after I left that day and put them all the way through, not just my hometown region, like in Georgia, which he initially said he was going to do to test it out. He ordered books for all across the Southeast, and then there again,
they can send them back if they don't sell. And I thought, okay, you know how that fear comes in. You have to keep fighting those negative forces. And what if they don't sell? Then they'll send them back. Then I'm a failure. Well, I got on the phone and called different random because I didn't know where he had sent them. And said, you have Deliciously Southern? And some said, yes, we have a couple of books, but we've already sold some. It was amazing. All the way through to Texas, New Orleans. And that's actually how I met Nancy here in Richmond. I called her. And I don't think she had the book, but she went online and looked at it. I'm going to order that. That's in our warehouse. I'd love to have you come up. So I started working it over the phone and making friends with people. There again, that's my marketing skills to come back. You know, my determination that not to quit. And you know what? They sold out. I almost get teary-eyed at this. They sold out after Christmas. They were calling me in Atlanta. I had a book signing in January, and they said, they don't have any books in the warehouse. What are we going to do? We got this coming up, and no one has any books. And so they have replaced all their books and work in process, and they're still selling. I mean, they didn't even know my story in picking up the book. So that's just that just shows that when you go through tough times, that something good could happen out of something bad.
What do you want to happen next?
Well, I want to keep on with Barnes & Noble, and I want to be able to take it nationally because I'm passionate about my Southern roots. I want to be able to be on Good Morning America Today show and talk about what I went through. And I want to help other people. It's become more than just about the recipes. It's become a passion to, if people have lost jobs, have lost their homes in this recession, or even if they have, if they've had something physically wrong with them happen to them, that your blessing is not what you've lost, what you have left. And I want to share that. And also, I'm passionate about a Southern culture because there again, I want to encourage families to make those mealtime memories. So I'm just excited about being able to show my passion about our South and our food, introduce it to the world. And
you've mentioned family. Obviously, that's something very important to you. You worked with your parents, and you've mentioned having children. How many children?
I have two. I have a son that's 20 years old, and I have a daughter that's 16, and he's in college in Texas, and she's in high school.
And okay. And recipes. Back to the recipes now. And we've talked about some of the sweets. Tell me about another recipe in the cookbook that isn't a sweet.
Okay, squash casserole. We were famous for our squash casserole. And it's different. It has Parmesan cheese in it, which, you know, that's normally what you don't find. You usually find
now,
it.
When you say we were famous, you're talking about BJ's,
the restaurant. Famous, right.
Okay, so this is one of the restaurant recipes.
Right, yes. Uh-huh. And actually, before we had the fire, we were retailing our frozen vegetables, like macaroni and cheese and squash casserole. We were selling those out of our freezer and with our labels on it, because they loved that. So that was, people would come all around. We had folks that would travel 5 hours away that would come and eat our squash casserole.
Could you read us the recipe and then tell us how you put together the ingredients to make squash casserole?
I will. Now, like I said before, we made them in big tubs, and I had to measure it down for like a family size. But in squash casserole, we start out with one medium onion chopped, half a cup of butter, 5 cups of fresh cooked squash drained with all the water squeezed out, and 2 eggs beaten, 1 1/4 cups of grated Parmesan cheese, 1 1/2 cups of mayonnaise, 1/8 teaspoon of ground nutmeg, but that's a little different and it gives it a little nice taste, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, and 1/8 teaspoon of white pepper. And of course, you cook your squash, and it's fresh squash. You want to use fresh squash. That makes all the difference in the world. And then you just mix that all together, and it's like a little bit of that nutmeg and that Parmesan cheese. Of course, the butter. You cook your onions first in the butter so they're soft. And then you just mix it all up, and then you put a topping, which I use a lot of Ritz on, the Ritz crackers with butter. Yeah, lots of butter. And you mix that together, and you just sprinkle it on top, and you bake it. And it is absolutely divine. It is so good.
Is it an entree, or is it a side dish?
It's a side dish.
And what would you serve squash casserole with? Don't you have menus in the book?
Right, I do have menus in the book. And I have, for every Southern occasion, because along the way with being in the restaurant business for 21 years, people call us and they say, well, I'm having company over, what do you suggest I should have? So we give a lot of different advice on menu planning and coordinating it with colors and all that too. But it would be great anytime. I love, especially on Sundays, Sunday dinner squash casserole just goes with fried chicken, doesn't it? And I even have a menu in here. I've got preachers coming over Sunday dinner. And
oh, so now what do you recommend when the preacher comes over?
Of course, you got to have the fried chicken, and you always going to have two meats. When you have the preacher come over, you want to have two meats too. Of course, he's going to eat the fried chicken because he'll eat all the fried chicken. And then the pot roast. I put Mama's pot roast, potatoes and carrots, and that's just Sunday dinner in the South, isn't it?
It really
and
is.
And squash casserole with that, especially in the summertime when the squash is fresh. And you know, we were talking about what's the difference in Southern foods that we celebrate. The summertime and our freshness, and we make good things out of what we grow.
And what's for dessert?
Oh, for dessert. Okay, well, you've got to have a peach cobbler, and I've got banana pudding, southern banana pudding.
Is there a secret for making good banana pudding?
Okay, from scratch. And that was actually the first thing that my mama taught me how to make was banana pudding. I was 8 years old, and I stepped on a little stool and cracked the eggs. This is the old-fashioned banana pudding that a lot of people don't even know exists now. And with the eggs, and it's like a custard. You make it like a custard with your eggs and your milk and your flour, of course, lots of sugar and vanilla. And you cook it till it's thickened. And then you slice your bananas, and you layer it with a good delicious vanilla wafers, and you gotta have the meringue too. Then you separate your eggs, and I remember cracking my eggs and separating my eggs, and Mama taught me how to do that, not get the egg yolks in. And then you whip up that meringue with sugar and put that on top, and you make it really fancy with the little spikes, and you bake it, and it's just absolutely to die for.
This sounds like the kind of food that we grew up with, but really don't find anymore.
Oh, it's a lost art, and that's another passion that I have to preserve our Southern heritage, because a lot of people they don't know what scratch banana pudding is, and that's just sad things that we've taken for granted. But and that's I'm on a real mission for that too, because people to enjoy the old fashioned state, those recipes and those Southern heritages, because they're not just recipes, there's stories behind it. And every recipe, it was fun when I was traveling around the South, because folks would tell me, I'd say, what's some of your favorites, or what do you think about, you know, you grew up with? And their eyes would light up, and they'd say, oh, I remember when my mom and my grandmother made this, and it was actually beyond the taste, it was the memories that made it even taste good. So that's a real passion, people to...
How much are you traveling? You're traveling a lot now, aren't you?
I am. I'm marketing my book now that I have got, you know, Barnes & Noble, and it took a lot of time just getting working those kind of paperwork things, but I am traveling now. And and do interviews, and I did a TV show this morning too. We did the Sweet Tea Pie, and just getting that message out. And along the way, I'm trying to preserve our Southern heritage and making family memories, encouraging especially young families to don't get so busy that you don't make those small sweet little memories of whipping up banana bread or just having some meal time around the table, even if it's just three or four times a week. And maybe Sunday dinner, if it's just one time a month, to do that and preserve that, because those are memories that you can make for a lifetime. And I feel like I'm on a mission for that also. And then for people who have lost something.
Now, are you able to balance spreading the word about having family time and Southern culture and Southern food with having that family time? You've mentioned that you have two kids.
I do. And I have slowed down because before I was running a restaurant for 7 days a week, imagine the treadmill. And so that's my first balance, is wanting whatever, you know, if that comes first, I'm a wife and mom first. And because I don't ever want to get back into that rat race again like that. But so I've asked God to help me with that, to balance my life and say no when I need to say no, and then to make it where I can do it, and then be organized. I'm working on that too. I'm working on a tour to go to Texas early fall, because see my son, so I could do that. So
your son at Baylor?
Yes, at Baylor. He's at Baylor, so I'm working on that. But it is true. It's like with my daughter, I have time with her because I don't want to. Because that's what I do. Regret all the years I worked so hard trying to make a living that my heart desire was to make those memories because I grew up with that. And but I don't want to ever go. I don't want to get in rat race again. So I do, you know, kind of balance that.
So really what you're saying is that not having the restaurant, being a cookbook author and promoting your book is easier and gives you more time with your family. Do you have another cookbook plan?
I do. I've got actually a series of cookbooks in my mind. But I've been working on another one that's a sequel to this that I would like to, the recipes I couldn't include and to add, and then maybe do one with mealtime memories and with the pictures and things too, maybe in it with families, and then doing one with quick and easy meals because a lot of their moms say, you know, come out with something like that too, because there again, I'm trying to juggle writing. I'm also doing some writing for a magazine too. I do a food styling, so that's taking up my time. So I know how it is. So I use my crock pot a lot. So I've been jotting down recipes that I've been coming up with. So I mean, deliciously southern, quick and easy meals. Something like that.
Well, you also do a blog, don't you?
I do a blog too about Southern Life, and I post that. So it is a lot of different kind of things.
Now, if somebody wanted to see your blog, where would they go?
They would go to AletaDupree.com and click on Southern Life.
And that's
AletaDupree. Dupree, DUPREE.com.
All one word.
All one word.
Okay. Okay. The book is really beautiful, and the cover is just delicious. I wish I could hold it up and let all of our audience see it. It's a beautiful southern white porch with white rocking chairs and gorgeous blue hydrangeas and a very, very delicious looking meal. There's a story behind this cover that you started to tell me about.
I could visualize in my mind the kind of cover that I wanted. And I thought, I got to go find a house for this. And then I was by downtown, our hometown of Calhoun, and I thought, there's the porch that I want. And so I went and knocked on the door. It was a former home of a Dr. Billings, and they're deceased now, but it's a real estate office, and they said, sure, we would love to do that. And she said, actually, we're going to paint it in 2 weeks. So it was perfect. So it was freshly painted, but it was special because my mom had gone to Dr. Billings. It was a doctor, and so when she was a little girl in that house, he had that little office, and so that was special. And then Mrs. Billings was a real socialite and a real southern belle, and she liked to entertain, so I just thought she would be so proud. And then I designed it because I wanted it to reflect the southern lifestyle, and it was perfect with the crepe myrtles and it was just like it was painted there, wasn't it?
The crepe myrtles are in blue.
Yeah, it was perfect. And so these are all the recipes, everything, the sandwiches, the tea, the iced tea, or pound cake. It symbolizes what we're all about and what I want people to remember and maybe gravitate more to is that lifestyle. So they're all in the cookbook, too, these recipes. Even the ribbon sandwiches are in the cookbook.
Well, they look yummy, and I can't wait to cook from this cookbook. Thank you for joining us
today. Thank you so much. I enjoyed it very much.
We've been talking with Aleta Dupree about her new cookbook called Deliciously Southern. You can get it at Barnes & Noble. You've been listening to The Writer's Voice. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Patty Campbell for The Virginia Voice.